I guess I would have been maybe bravery in the sense of being more honest with the songs, kind of like I explained to you, where maybe, you know, there was people, we didn't reach that next level with the bands because people weren't attaching themselves to the songs as well as maybe they could have if I had been a little more honest. Maybe that's probably what I would tell myself. But at the same time, I'm not necessarily a everything happens for a reason person, but I do believe that everything that I did and everything that happened in my musical career thus far had to happen for me to get to where I am at today in my headspace, in the quality of the songs that I'm writing and kind of how I feel about the future ahead for my music.
Welcome to Songwriter Trysts. This is an intimate podcast that is connecting songwriters from all over the world. I'm singer-songwriter Ray Lee. Music saved my life, and I love talking with other artists about the power of songwriting and their journey to where they are today. This is a safe space to share stories, lessons, and emotions, all the great things that build an amazing song. Please support the podcast by subscribing, or you can buy us a coffee, all through the website songwritertrysts.com. Welcome to A Songwriter Tryst with Ryan Tarigno. How are you?
I'm doing very well. How are you?
I'm good. And you're all the way over in California, South California, is that what you said?
That's correct. I'm in Anaheim, which is about 5 minutes from Disneyland.
So. Oh, amazing. That is definitely on my bucket list.
Oh, never been, huh?
I'd like to go. The only time I've been to LA was because my flight from Austin was delayed and I missed my connecting flight. So they put me up in a hotel for 24 hours. And I did make it down to the Santa Monica Pier because I had 24 hours. Why not? But that's my I need to get to LA and spend more time in California. And Disneyland is definitely on the list. Dream.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. I just need someone to buy me a few more coffees so I can afford it.
Yes, absolutely. Especially now. It's gotten obscenely expensive at this point.
Yeah, it's the same everywhere. Mm-hmm. The world is changing. All right, tell us a little bit about you. I'd like you to introduce yourself. Where are you from and what do you do?
Yeah, absolutely. So I am originally from Southern California. I haven't really gotten too far away from Anaheim where I live now. Actually, I was born about 12 minutes away.
Oh, wow.
And and I'm currently 39 years old. And I got heavily into playing music when I was 13. My grandparents bought me my first guitar. Oh. And I was obsessed with Green Day at the time. I just wanted to be Billy Joe Armstrong. That's just all I wanted. I emulated every single move he made.
Yeah.
And just started kind
them?
Of, no, I've been very close to them. I won a contest to see them play at this very, very random dive bar near the beach in Orange County. And me and like 150 other people. So it was a very intimate venue to see Green Day at.
Yeah, very cool. Okay. Sorry. Yeah. So Green Day inspiration. Yep. And then?
Green Day inspiration. Yep, absolutely. And my sister, so that's kind of what got me into rock music. And my sister had a kind of a punk collection. You know, she was into things like The Vandals, Unwritten Law, a lot of kind of 90s punk music. Mm-hmm. And I kind of started stealing a lot of that music and sort of kind of kept evolving my musical taste.
Yeah.
And just sort of became obsessed over the next few years after having that guitar and playing some cover bands with my friends. And at 16, I decided to try my hand at writing my first song. And that's really where my obsession with songwriting started. So I guess that's, 23 years now that I've been able to call myself a songwriter.
You have to tell me, what was the inspiration for the 16-year-old song that you wrote?
Probably not too different from any 16-year-old songs. It was called Never Good Enough. I wrote it and, you know, I scribbled it in my my notebook during class one day. And I don't even know if it was really about something specific. I just sort of decided to start writing some songs or writing some words down. And it's what came out. I can't tell if I actually thought I wasn't good enough or not. I just knew I had to write a song.
Yeah. What made you think you needed to write a song?
I had been playing, you know, the cover songs with a few friends for a good year and a half at that point. Mm-hmm. And I just knew that somehow bands got original songs, right? Somehow they got them. Someone had to write them. Yeah. And it was very clear that probably my other bandmates weren't going to kind of take that initiative. So I just decided to try my hand at it, which is the same way. Actually, I became the lead singer of the bands that I started. I had no intention of doing that. Yeah. It was just when we got into our first band practice to cover a Green Day song, I knew the lyrics to When I Come Around.
Yeah.
And by default, I was the singer.
You know the lyrics, you're in, you're done.
Yeah. So that dictated what I did for the next about 13 years of my life.
I love that. No, that's really cool. And are you a bit cringeworthy of those songs, or have you ever released any of those earlier songs, or what happened with them?
That's a good question. Cringeworthy? I wouldn't, maybe not. You know, I'm proud that I sat down and wrote something that turned into a piece of music that me and three other people were able to perform.
Good, yeah.
But yeah, they didn't get released outside of just some very old kind of early 2000s camcorder footage.
Mm-hmm.
But it would be interesting to go back and listen to them now. I actually might cringe now that you mention it.
That's right. I feel like that's a rite of passage. You've got to do something that your older self looks back and goes, oh, but I mean, it's also... That's what you do as a teenager. So.
Oh, sure. And you have to evolve in anything, right? You don't just come out of the womb ready to write hit songs. At least I don't think so.
I mean, I do, but no. Okay, so you started writing, and then what was the experience of being in a band, and how have you gone from, you know, writing songs in a band situation to now doing solo? What's that journey?
Yes, so that it was quite a journey, actually. So I had two bands throughout the 2000s. I had one from 2000 to 2005. Mm-hmm. And one from 2006 to 2013. Mm-hmm. So it was two bands, but we were fairly successful. You know, we tour the US, we got to tour in Japan, we released two full-length albums, four EPs, had some local radio play, music videos. So we kind of did essentially everything that you could kind of do on your own at that time without having a label. Like we were kind of right on that precipice where we need a label to get that next move. And it just never quite came. And, you know, that it was, I was the one that, you know, on top of being the songwriter and the lead vocalist, I was kind of the manager, the guy. So I was doing the booking, the merchandise. It was everything to me, my livelihood. So, you know, when the time came where, you know, both of the bands broke up as a result of losing members, it was just, you know, after all that time, years had gone by, then you'd lose people. Then it's just like, man, what are we doing here? Maybe it's not going to work out.
Mm.
So, you know, after 13 years, I was not getting any younger. So I think when my last band broke up, I was about 28. And it had just so happened that I fell into this full-time job at like a tech startup.
Mm-hmm.
And so the band broke up at the same time that I was kind of found this new opportunity to try my hand at something different. And I'm like, you know what, maybe I'll just see where this goes and do this for a while. I didn't want to give up music and, you know, just go into this full-time career.
Mm.
It was the last thing I wanted, but at least it was like a startup. So it was kind of akin to having a band. Like we were still always fighting to get that next deal, you know, to grow the company, just like I was trying to grow my band. So at least there was some parallels there where I could just, you know, put my blood and sweat and tears into it. It wasn't just punching a clock.
Yeah.
But that entire time, you know, from 2011 until literally 2022, I was still writing music every single night for about 10 years. I was still writing, still going to shows, my wife and I, you know, as often as we could. Music still meant everything to me. And I just knew the only thing I was doing was working so that one day I would find my way back to music. That's what I was doing. I just kept telling myself that as every year went by, the company did this and that. I'm like, one day I'll have my chance to do this again.
So what was the catalyst to change in going back, coming back?
Yeah, it's interesting. It's kind of twofold, actually. So in 2022, the company decided we were going to try and sell it, you know, do that whole startup dream thing. Let's sell our company.
Mm-hmm.
So during that time, you know, I knew that a big shift was going to come in my professional life. But at the same time, in the fall of that year, my wife and I took this kind of transformational trip to Nashville. It was the second time we had been. And it just became this very music-centric trip. You know, we went and saw an artist that I really, really love named Rustin Kelly. He was playing at the Ryman Auditorium, which is, you know, historical country music venue. We saw him twice on this trip. I actually got to play an open mic night at the Bluebird Cafe, which is another historical venue out there in Nashville. Yeah. And, you know, when I got home, I just decided, you know, I've put so much time into this company, and now that's going to change. It's going to be something new. I don't know what that future looks like. Yeah. And after I came back from this trip, I'm like, you know what? It's time to just get back in to what makes me the most me. I've spent enough time following someone else's dream. It's time to go back to mine.
Yeah.
And that was November of that year. And I just decided to pick up my guitar and just start writing. And something clicked. I was all of a sudden writing with a new kind of confidence and dedication and a willingness to try something different from the lyrical styling, from the tuning of my guitar. Mm. And that's what brought me to my album. That was the end of 2021.
Wow. Okay. So just after sort of all COVID and everything like that.
Yes, just after COVID. So I guess I wasn't unlike a lot of people who just, you know, went through that period of time and decided it's time to figure out what means the most to me, you know, whether it was songwriting or something else.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I spent the next few months, you know, writing these songs, and I came to a point where I realized I felt like I had written the best songs of my entire career this far into it.
Yeah.
Which could have gone the other way. You know, I feel like somebody at almost 40 coming back to music after a professional career, the word burnout came into my mind. I'm like, I hope that's not what I am right now.
No,
I hope.
I love this journey. I want to, and you don't have to share, but you've talked about how passionate you are about music and how you've always known it's been a massive, important part of your life. Have you looked at, or do you have any explanation for you? Why is music so important and powerful for you? What's it meant in your life?
Wow, that's a great, great question. So it's interesting. You know, my parents weren't musicians. That's often the tale for, you know, people who have dedicated their lives to playing instruments and playing music. It's usually the dad was a pianist. The mom was, you know, a violin player. That was not the case for me. Very much the opposite. But my mom always had music on in the car, around the house. We had speakers installed around our house. So if I was home, if I was in the car with them growing up, there was music playing at all times. Mm. and so I think that I must dedicate how it got so ingrained in me was thanks to my mom for those reasons. She used to carry around this little leather briefcase with cassette tapes in them. And it was all, she wasn't like a classic rock person. I think I missed out on a lot of, you know, the classic rock bands that a lot of, you know, rock musicians grew up on.
Yeah.
It's embarrassing sometimes. She listened to this very interesting kind of like almost old school gospel country style of music.
Yeah.
But I think what that gave me was this sense of melody. I think I owe that to her, and the style of music she played was just I found early on in my songwriting career that I had a prowess for writing melody and pairing the lyrics with them.
Mm, that's my too. My parents were missionaries, and I would say that my parents were playing a lot of like old hymns and Christian country or gospel music, and that it does give you a different flavor to what everyone else is listening to. But then I also grew up like on the radio was rock and Green Day and Muse and all that kind of cool stuff in the 90s.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
So it's an interesting mix. It's like, how do you put that together? And you know, now you're the impact of that, the product of that influence.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I think I owe again my sister to kind of bringing me out of whatever I grew up on to finding rock music. And to kind of go back to your initial question here, like it is kind of hard to explain. I just know that when I used to listen to some of these records growing up, when I first got into Green Day and everything that came after, it just made me feel something unlike anything else I knew in my life. And when I finally started writing my own songs, my goal was to chase those feelings that all the songs that I loved made me feel. I just wanted to chase that. I wanted to try to make myself feel those feelings from something that I had written. And I could only imagine that if I could accomplish that, that other people would feel that too.
Mm-hmm.
So I think I've just been chasing that, you know, my entire songwriting career, and still am. I think forever will be.
Aren't we all? Tell me about your songwriting experience. How has that developed? Do you do much co-writing? What's your process?
Yeah, so it's always been kind of a solo thing. Even in the band, I was the kind of songwriter that would be kind of toiling away on my own at night, and then I'd bring the song ideas to the band, and then we'd flesh them out together. Mm-hmm. But at the end of the day, they largely mirrored kind of the original idea I brought, just better. Mm-hmm. And at this point now, I still don't do a lot of co-writing. It's something I feel like I want to do more of. Mm. I just haven't jumped at those opportunities. So I've really been kind of a solo songwriter for a good long while. Even this entire period from my band's breaking up to now has just been me in this room you're looking at now, just playing away by myself. And I think that room. Works out.
That's where I do it.
Yours seems much more inspirational than mine, actually.
Well, I have like a parents' retreat space at the end of my room, and that's just my studio.
Okay.
But yeah, ever since I was a kid, like, I don't know, you know, your bedroom as a child is your safe space if you have your own room. And that was where I've always just done writing in my room. I don't know why.
Yeah,
it's a safe space.
It is. And I don't know if you're exactly like me. I have to have solitude. It doesn't mean I can't co-write, but if I even think that there's a chance my wife is listening from the next room, I freeze up. I can't go. I need to have complete solitude.
Okay. And I've actually done some co-writing, and I don't know if this might help for you, but I've co-written with some people, especially people who are overseas, where it's still a co-write, but what we've done is we've emailed some ideas, and I'll like do something on my own in my room and I'll be like, here's a verse and a chorus. I think that, you know, this person that I've met would be a really good fit to co-write with this song. So then I send them what I've got, and then they send back some ideas, and then I do a little bit more on my own, and then I, you know, I work out what I'm happy with, and I'll be like, well, what do you think of this? And that way I've got that freedom to explore in that solitude. But then I also have the collaboration and the co-writing and that sounding board experience that you get in a co-write. But I just get to like check that I'm happy with the ideas first before I send it to them. I don't know. Yeah. I mean, have you ever tried that?
I haven't, but that actually sounds like it would be up my alley. I think that having some of that kind of solo time to focus on the work and make sure you're delivering something you're happy with. And
yeah, because it is. It's scary because you say such random, like, it's an intimate, this is why we call it somewhere a tryst, because tryst is the intimate connection between lovers, and it's a play on word. But when you co-write with someone, it's so intimate, you know, it is bearing everything, or at least to have a successful song, you kind of need to aim to be able to bear everything and be intimate, and it's scary.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And it's actually how I have approached, you know, I mentioned that transformational trip and how I came back and started writing a little bit of a different way. Mm. Well, it is interesting that when I used to play in my bands, I used to try and be ambiguous and vague almost on purpose. Mm. I always felt like I was a decent lyric writer, but I would always try and almost confuse because I thought that was cooler. I thought, you know, if they don't know what I'm talking about, they'll like it more. Mm-hmm. Which at this day, this point in my career, I don't like that when I'm listening to a song anymore. If I don't know exactly what you're talking about, I generally don't gravitate towards it. I want to know what you had for breakfast this morning and how it tasted, you know.
Be vulnerable.
Absolutely. Mm. And that's how I started approaching my lyric writing for everything that ended up on the album that I ended up just completing. Mm. Because that's how I found that some of my biggest inspirations at this point, that's how they approached their lyrical writing, was just being completely brutally honest, even when it's very uncomfortable.
And that is, I find that for me, that's as an artist, that's my ultimate goal, is to find out what my vulnerability is, because we don't always know. You have to do a lot of self-reflecting to work out what it is. But then, you know, to then share it in public takes courage, to be that vulnerable. And I still struggle. Like, I'm actually a piano player. You can see a piano next to me. Mm-hmm. I've been playing piano since I was six, but I still perform live most of the time, predominantly on the guitar, because I feel too naked playing piano in front of people. Mm-hmm. And once I became aware that that was the reason, I was like, okay, well, I need to work towards getting to that point where I can play and sing in front of people on a piano. But it's still just at the moment I'm like, nah, it's too vulnerable. It's too – I feel too naked and too emotionally weak, I guess, to be that vulnerable in public and allow people to – because most of the time when I'm sitting at the piano, I'm crying or, I'm at that space. And that's – I'm glad I'm aware of it now because I can work on it, but it's hard.
Right. No, I completely understand that. Totally. Mm. I would be the same way. It's me. I don't play the piano well for sure. Guitar is my main instrument. And there's been opportunities throughout my career where someone asked me if I wanted to just do vocals and have someone else play guitar. And I said, absolutely not. I could never stand up on stage without something hiding me or, you know, separating me from the audience. I need that guitar.
So yeah, I'm the opposite. I'm quite happy for someone else to take the instrument. Take the instrument. Let me just focus on singing. Because, I mean, it's another skill having to be able to play and sing. You got to multitask. I mean, some people sure. do it quite naturally. I don't mind it. I think I've always, from the moment I started playing piano, I wanted to be able to play and sing. And so I just started learning both together at the same time. But I do know that if I learned an instrument and then I tried to start singing, like later on in life, I feel like I can understand how some people might find it challenging. It takes a lot of practice.
Absolutely. And I still don't consider myself, I still call myself a songwriter more than a guitarist. The guitar, mm-hmm. I'm good enough to be dangerous, right? It's my vehicle to get the song out. That's about it. I don't get really technical on the guitar. I never learned scales, anything like that.
Yeah, okay.
It's really just to get the song.
Yeah, cool. So after all your experiences of being in the band and playing guitar and, you know, having a break and coming back with some more maturity and emotional wisdom in Nashville, what would you say if you could go back in time and speak to, say, your 16-year-old self and give yourself one piece of advice, what would it be?
My mind was going to tell myself to be brave. But at the end of the day, I feel like there was a lot of bravery in the 12, 13 years I dedicated to trying to make music my life. We did a lot of things that took some bravery. So I guess there was some level of that already. I guess I would have been maybe bravery in the sense of being more honest with the songs, kind of like I explained to you, where maybe, you know, there was people, we didn't reach that next level with the bands because people weren't attaching themselves to the songs as well as maybe they could have if I had been a little more honest. Maybe that's probably what I would tell myself. But at the same time, I'm not necessarily a everything happens for a reason person, but I do believe that everything that I did and everything that happened in my musical career thus far had to happen for me to get to where I am at today in my headspace, in the quality of the songs that I'm writing and kind of how I feel about the future ahead for my music.
Yeah. No, and I think that's a great place to be, to see everything as just a part of your journey and enjoy the journey. You can't have it all until you learn to love it all. That's what I say.
Absolutely. Because I've been writing, you know, I never stopped over this 10-year break. But really, looking back on a lot of those songs, there was pieces that were good. But I think if I had taken those to my producer that did my album, I don't know if he would have been all that into it. I think I had to get all those out of the way. because even the producer I worked with was a guy named Alex Deason, and he's somebody I really, really respected and have for many years. He played in a band called the Damwells. He's produced Justin Bieber, written for him, and some other artists. And, you know, it took me a bit to get the courage to write him and first ask him if he would participate in my album.
For reaching out, I think that is something that is underrated and a lot of people maybe don't do. You know, maybe they're writing songs in their room like yourself and waiting for someone to come to them. But it's like as artists, we have to be brave to go out and ask and reach out. And sometimes you have to do multiple reach outs. You know, sometimes, you know, writing an email and not getting a response once isn't enough sometimes in this industry. Sometimes you have to send 20 emails and it takes 2 or 3 years and a bunch of phone calls to get a response from someone. Whether it takes, you know, one time or 20 times, yeah, don't give up on your dreams or don't take rejection. Like rejection is just one of those things that if you can't deal with it, this isn't the industry for you. But then also if you hide and run away from rejection in life in general, you know, the fear of rejection is going to limit your life and how much you can grow and how much you can enjoy an adventure and experience, because rejection is so much a part of what life is. But my saying is, it's not rejection, it's redirection. It's the world telling you that this is the direction, this is or isn't the direction that, you know, you're meant to be in. And so, you know, because I'm an actor as well and I do music and acting, so much rejection. Like, and you have to learn to change your mindset on, it's maybe not a no. No's never a no forever. No's just a no for right now. And you've just got to be like, all right, that's great. Don't waste any energy wondering why it was a no. Just, you know, another door's going to open somewhere else and it's going to be even better. And you just have to have faith that that's the way life's going to be.
Oh, absolutely. I completely agree. And, you know, especially with music. I mean, music is so subjective. You know, you are not going to please everybody. Everyone, music, the same song is going to be heard by each individual person differently. Right. You know, and exactly. Each person, each individual is going to love something different, hate something different, gravitate towards a different lyric, you know, understand that lyric differently. So that's something I've really been trying to come to terms with, especially now that my songs are a lot more just kind of raw and broken down. And again, just honest.
Yeah.
I gave my album very proudly to one of my best, longest friends.
Yeah.
And when he texted me back and gave me some feedback, I could tell he actually didn't really care for it all that much. I could tell, but he was trying to be supportive. He called out a few things that he did appreciate about it. And I appreciated that.
Yeah.
You know, that could be enough for some people to just get really down on themselves and say, oh, well, the whole album sucks. I need to scrap it.
Yeah.
But you just can't
do it and then try and get better. And getting feedback is hard to do as well, but it's so important. And I have had people say, well, you know, say you've released a song, you've done a music video, it's all out there. You're not going to change it. I'll ask for feedback on that. And people are like, well, why do you want feedback on something that's completed and finished? That you're not going, and it's like, because I'm going to do another song and I'm going to do more music and I want it to be better. And I can't get better if I don't know what's wrong with this. Do you know what I mean?
Oh, sure. Absolutely.
And I think that's, again, like nothing's ever perfect, is it? So, you know, we can only get better if we're honest with ourselves about things like that. Tell me about your inspirations. I understand Green Day is a massive inspiration, but if you could collaborate with anyone in the world, dead or alive, who would it be and why?
So that's a fairly easy question, at least as you're asking me right now today in 2023. I'm almost kind of borderline obsessed with that artist I mentioned previously, Rustin Kelly. He's kind of just really up and coming. And he's kind of he walks this line between a country artist and almost like an emo artist that came out of like the early 2000s where my bands came from. And he walks this line, and in addition to just kind of having this vibe that I like and appreciate, the way he writes, his attention to melody, his lyrical content, it's all essentially what I aspire to be. Mm-hmm. And just seems like a cool dude. So if I could sit down and write a song with him, I would be extremely happy about that.
Awesome.
Yeah, but it's miraculously this, my producer, Alex Deason, like I mentioned, he was on my list of people I would like to collaborate with. So I don't have this list of really huge names, like, which is, you know, that everyone's going to recognize. But Alex has, he's one of my favorite songwriters. He did a lot of work with the Damwells. He's got a long solo career. And I got to work with him and essentially write with him. And he produced my album. And it was hard for me at first, hope he's not listening to this, to not fanboy at first, you know, to just sort of relax and be cool.
Yeah.
But eventually, you know, we developed a friendship, and now, you know, we text each other, and his fingerprints are all over my songs and my album. And that's it's just amazing. Such a proud thing for me. So
I think I'm glad that you had that. and it just proves that, you know, the hard work that you've put in and the bravery of reaching out and working with someone that you wanted to work with, has paid off. So well done. Wishing you all the best for the future. What is the plans for the future? I'm going to put all your links for socials and website and stuff like that on the blog, and it'll be on the website as well, songwritertrist.com. But what else can we expect from you?
Yeah, it's a great question. So my debut album as a solo artist is done. It's called Alive and Well. It's going to be coming out in the fall, but we just released the first single on May 12th, which is called Get Lost. That's on Spotify now. And I've been spending a lot of time learning how to be an artist on social media here in 2023, which is a lot of learning, a lot of keeping up on things, watching numbers, watching analytics. It's fun. So it takes a lot of time away from the actual writing, having to market yourself these days, but you know, got to do it. So
do you have a publicist or a PR agent that you're working with?
I am working with a small team out of Athens, Georgia right now called Team Claremont. Mm-hmm. They are helping me with some publicity, and so they've gotten me a few mentions on some online publications, things like that, which has helped. Some good stuff on Spotify. You know, Get Lost just cracked 5,000 streams, and we've only been out for 3 weeks, so that's, I'm very proud of that. But we got the next single coming out, I think, on July 7th, which is called I Can Still Break Your Heart.
Oh.
And, yes, it's actually a love song, I promise.
Okay.
Honor. And that features a guest piano by a fella named Zach Clark, who plays with Ange McMahon in the Wilderness, who is another one of my big inspirations. And it was just a dream to have him playing on this song. So I'm really excited to release that one.
Amazing.
But so new singles throughout the summer until the album comes out in the fall. And I'm just going to kind of continue promoting that and hopefully start playing live more and more as the album gets closer.
Awesome. Well, I look forward to hearing the new songs. And I really appreciate you coming on and sharing so honestly about your journey and what you've been through and what you're doing now. And I'm glad that you've come back to music. Is there anything else you'd like to share before we finish up?
I think that's it. I just really appreciate you, Ray, having this having the podcast in the first place. I think you're doing a great thing here for songwriters, and I'm so happy to be a part of it.
Well, I'm glad that you're a part of the Songwriter Trist family now. So you've officially trysted with Rayleigh. Thank you. I hope that I get to see you play live sometime, whether you get to come to Australia or whether it's one of my trips to America. But I really do wish you all the best, and we're going to be cheering you on. So thank you.
Well, thank you so much, Ray. Appreciate it.
Thanks for joining our Songwriter Trist today. To join the family and keep up to date with future podcasts, you can follow us on Facebook, LinkedIn, Instagram, and Twitter. Please leave a review and subscribe. To support the podcast or contact me or our guests, please go to the website songwritertrists.com.